Mouth.
Word of
mouth.
Word of
mouth.
Look out. From New Hampshire Public Radio, this is Word of Mouth. I'm Virginia Prescott, and that is the audio calling card for Awesomator Brady Carlson to confound, dazzle, and surprise us with Here's What's Awesome. That's our regular look at the latest memes, misfires, and meaningful conversations taking place on the internet. Brady, great to have you back.
You had me at memes, Virginia.
I knew it. Aside from being the Awesomator, Brady is also NHPR's host for All Things Considered. That's where listeners have heard a lot about our top story today, reactions to the video which insults Islam and which has prompted protests, riots all throughout the Middle East. Brady, it's an internet-driven story. I mean, that's how this video is passed around. How does this change the conversation about news, stories, social media? How do we talk about it?
Well, let's start with the video itself, which, like you said, is posted on YouTube. And social channels have become increasingly put in these positions where they become arbiters of important policy decisions that have ramifications outside of just whether somebody likes a video or not. In this case, obviously the protesters want this video to be taken down, and social channels to different degrees, but largely have encouraged free and open exchange. The White House also asked YouTube to reconsider whether this video violated any terms of service. YouTube reviewed it and said that they felt it had not, and so they said the video was going to stay up, but they said the video would stay blocked in Libya and in Egypt for the time being. Those are the two countries where the protests have been most widespread and, of course, most violent. Several other countries have asked the video to be blocked because they said it was illegal in their countries. And this is kind of a side story, but an interesting one. Officials in Russia filed a lawsuit saying all of YouTube should be blocked because of this video. And activists there say this is just a pretense the government is using to stifle more dissenting voices. So you can see how all of this large political activity all centering around one social media channel.
Right, and an international boundaryless kind of medium. After the death of Chris Stevens, which of course, you know, was all linked to this, the U.S. ambassador to Libya, he and three other members of the diplomatic staff killed there. A number of news organizations posted a YouTube video that Chris Stevens had made introducing himself to Libyans. And now this is a case we're hearing a lot of policymakers that we should be making the case every day in these various forms of media for what the U.S. is doing there. How are diplomats using social media now?
Secretary of State Hillary Clinton called it soft power when she was announcing a year ago or so that the State Department was going to invest heavily in using social media in countries around the world. Essentially, relationship building. And you're seeing that not so much on YouTube, though, of course, certainly on YouTube, but mostly on Twitter. You're seeing active exchanges, or at least attempts to make exchanges, by U.S. diplomatic posts and members of the diplomatic corps trying to engage with people in the country where they're stationed. There was a very interesting exchange going on in Egypt where an account used by the Muslim Brotherhood posted in English that it was relieved no Americans were hurt in the protests around the embassy in Cairo. So the U.S. at U.S. Embassy Cairo account responded. They said essentially, thanks. But we also saw in your Arabic language Twitter feed, you were praising the protests and the protesters. And we do read those, too. So mm-hmm. you can see how that's a useful tool
right.
to sort of get your side of the story across. But there is a tension here for diplomats on social media channels because we know that Twitter and other sort of real-time media are most effective when you're speaking in a personal voice, mm-hmm. not necessarily as an organization, a faceless organization,
voice.
The official channel. And yet diplomats have to have their statements vetted. That's the whole idea of the diplomatic corps, is that it goes through official channels to make sure things are posted and said the way that they want them to be said at the highest levels. And in fact, the U.S. Embassy Cairo account did delete some of its tweets that were made during the protests later on. And so this tension, this balancing act is something we're going to have to watch further as we start to see more diplomats using these social media channels.
How about the broader online conversation about the protests now going on? It's interesting to think that, you know, a year and a half ago, we were all glued to watching protests in many Middle Eastern countries because it was the Arab Spring. We were like cheering them on. Now it's a very, very different reaction.
It's a very complicated reaction now. And you are seeing some very sweet, touching moments. We saw a number of posts go viral of Libyans who had taken pictures of themselves holding signs in English saying, "This does not represent us. These attacks mm-hmm. are not the Libyan people speaking, they're terrorists speaking, or they're violent extremist speaking, but not the heart of the country. And you do see that regularly now when the debate over Israel potentially attacking Iran's suspected nuclear program was reaching a fever pitch. There were a number of Israelis who had posted pictures saying, "We don't want to bomb Iranians. We love you." And some Iranians saying in response, "Well, we love you too. We want peace." And so you do see that as a way people feel like they're bypassing the official channels.
Right. So a very different ground up conversation rather than the top down.
And that's going to continue most likely. There's always an attempt during big news stories for news organizations to try and be relevant and shape the conversation. Newsweek, of course, has been drawing some fire lately for the big cover with Muslim rage cover showing the protesters looking very angry and scary. And they tried to use a hashtag on Twitter, Muslim Rage, to get people to talk about it. And that backfired. Muslims were mocking it in no end of ways. There was one user who posted, "Here's my Muslim rage. I'm having such a good hair day and no one even knows." So they were not taking that the way it was intended by Newsweek. So we put it lightly.
It's actually generated some very funny sort of commentary from Muslim users. We're talking to, we're assuming anyway, because they were speaking as that. We're speaking with Brady Carlson. He is our Awesomeator. We're talking about, you know, some of the news on the web, as we always do. But there are a lot of kind of serious topics this week, especially with a web-generated or a web-shared video that has insulted Muslims throughout the Middle East. Speaking of mocking, I mean, let's change the tone here. No one in the U.S. has been mocked more recently than the NFL replacement refs. These are the guys who are now making calls as the NFL lockout goes on. Fans who have been watching these first few weeks have a lot of, let's say, commentary. A lot is going
spirited
on the web.
Commentary.
Let's hear a little bit of that.
This was flat out the wrong call.
What kind of implications will this call have?
And, just praying they get these calls right. And unfortunately, this wasn't one of those times.
Watch, watch. Who's holding who? Who's holding who?
They had his hand outside the shoulder.
Now, Brady, let's just say it cannot be easy to be an NFL replacement.
You notice I'm not volunteering to go out there and start making these calls myself because I fear the Twitter backlash.
Well,
I'm all about the love.
The internet loves to hate these guys.
The internet loves to hate people in general. Bill Simmons, the columnist, said, you know, this is like perfect for the state of the internet in 2012. People love to hate on things that they find incompetent or ridiculous or unfair. And this is kind of, you know, case in point of that. And here's the proof that he's right. The most retweeted tweets in the history of Twitter are not anything to do with the Arab Spring, not President Obama speaking about gay marriage, but it's Packers player TJ Lang saying an expletive in reference to the calls that cost the Packers the game against the Seahawks, and then saying, "Fine me," and then use the money for the fine to pay the regular refs.
Oh,
that is the most retweeted tweet of all time.
Wait, so that's, more than like Justin Bieber?
People are getting all over this thing, and that's not gonna let up. My favorite meme was a photo of two refs discussing a call, and then it says in the typical image macro font, it says, "After further review, the runner did not touch second base. Therefore, touchdown Celtics." That tells you what, in a nutshell, what the internet thinks of these replacement refs.
Brady, a lot of what's cool on the internet these days actually springs from the crowdfunding website Kickstarter. This has been a big success story, especially in the spring when Amanda Palmer became the first musician to raise more than $1 million using Kickstarter. The new album that was funded, Theater is Evil, was just released this month. Let's just hear a little bit of the track, The Killing Type, that everyone's money helped to pay for. Now, I think the album sounds pretty good, but things have not been peachy for Palmer. What's happening with her tour?
Well, Amanda Palmer put out a call on this tour for local musicians, string and horn players to join her on stage at each stop, and said that in return for their playing, they would receive beer and hugs.
Oh, I don't think that's the union fee, is it?
Not exactly. And I think she's probably saw this as another example of crowdsourcing, you know, bringing people into the performance, bringing people into the art. The web saw this very differently. They said, didn't you just raise $1 million? You can afford to pay these folks a little bit. And so she did then reconsider and issued a long blog post in response saying, okay, I will pay them, and they will still get the beer and hugs as well.
She's probably one of the few who has such a following in social media that she could raise that kind of money. I mean, next time she goes out, will people still be willing to give?
I think that's an interesting question, because as I've started to sort of dip my feet into the water of Kickstarter and learn more about it, I've noticed that most of the success, I don't want to say most, but many successful projects are by known commodities. They're people who have done projects through more traditional types of media before, who have a following, who have a presence, and people are gravitate toward that. They already have a fan base, in other words. And so Kickstarter then could potentially run the risk of becoming a place where, you know, each project becomes a fait accompli. You know, do the Red Hot Chili Peppers suddenly wake up one morning and go, oh, well, we're going to kickstart our next album, you know, when we raise $10 million. That'll be a big success story. Or does it stay as something of a showcase for unknowns who have great ideas and need a different mechanism to fund their project? That's a question I think that people are going to be looking at going forward.
Well, as always, Brady, we have more ideas than we have time. But another platform I just have to mention, MySpace. What? Who remembers? I've heard that people are still using MySpace. In fact, it's had a little bit of a kickstart itself.
Justin Timberlake is now an investor in MySpace.
He's bringing Facebook back.
I don't know if we should even call it MySpace anymore. We should have to call it Justin Timberlake Space, and he is the only one who can call it MySpace. They are trying to rebuild this site as a sort of a way for artists and entertainers, popular figures, to be able to connect with their fan base. And it's not clear whether that's going to work or not, because that's a big part of Twitter already and a number of other platforms. But also MySpace, has the challenge of its own history. MySpace is popularly thought of as the site we all used to use and no longer use because it wasn't that good. And so overcoming that is going to be a huge hurdle, Justin Timberlake notwithstanding.
Yeah, must be some method acting on his part. He's acting like an internet entrepreneur. Okay, so of course, we love to waste time looking at videos on the internet. Tell me about Star Wars is involved. Tell us.
Yeah, this is a cute little video of a little baby who is very, very fussy. And anybody who has a baby knows that that's a big part of the drill. And you try to find anything that will work to get the baby to calm back down. This parent found that putting the cell phone next to the baby playing the Star Wars music is what calms the baby down. And at the end, you can even hear the parent say, "Works every time." It is absolutely adorable.
The force is with
that baby. The force is with that baby for sure.
Well, Brady Carlson, the force is always with you, as far as I can tell. And NHPR's awesomator Brady Carlson, he's also our All Things Considered host. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
And of course, there are links to all the videos and the articles that we talked about today at wordofmouthradio.org. We'd love to hear your observations as well. We always want to hear from you. Suggest some links to us. Let us know at Facebook or on Twitter. I guess we're not on MySpace.
Not yet.
It's only a matter of time before we're bringing MySpace back.